This product is not yet rated.
Our second episode of the BioShock 2 podcast series takes us deeper inside 2K Marin and lets us peek over the shoulders of some of the designers and ask the question, how do you actually make this game?
Hi, I'm Steve Gaynor. I'm a level designer on BioShock 2. I started at 2K Marin about a year ago. I was one of the first level designers that they hired. I had worked down in Texas on an expansion pack for the first-person shooter Fear before this, and then I met some of the cool guys from Marin at GDC in 2008, and we got to talking, and I ended up joining the team.
My name's Alex Munn, and I've been doing environment art for quite a while. I started out at a small kids educational company, Knowledge Adventure, and then I moved on to Blizzard. Worked there for quite a while, and
on Diablo 2.
On Diablo 2,
a totally sweet game.
And then thank you. And then on to Stormfront, and then finally last summer I ended up at 2K Marin.
That's Steve and Alex, and they're the level design team making the fourth level of BioShock 2. Even from their introductions, I could tell these guys had quite a rapport with one another, comfortable enough even to finish each other's sentences. And that is one of the most beautiful things about how 2K Marin develops games, and the relationship I was here to explore. I wanted to understand more about the unique way they pair their designers and artists together to make a realistic and immersive level.
I'm the level designer on one level in the game, which would be equivalent to take your pick from BioShock 1, like, you know, Arcadia or Fort Frolic or whatever. So I'm the level designer, and Alex is the level architect in our terminology. It basically means that Alex is in charge of how the place looks and how it's shaped and what it is, and then I'm primarily in charge of what happens there. You know, where guys are, what events happen, who you meet, and what objectives you have, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I just say a level architect's sort of a new term, I guess, but it's sort of a close cousin of the environment artist. Yeah. And it involves a lot of organizing and sort of, you know, from the start, sort of conceptualizing, figuring out what the look and feel of a location is, all the way through all the production and figure out how the assets are going to get modeled, whether it's making them myself or working with modeling team through lighting and performance tuning and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we work together a lot just because, you know, back in the day, one might say, not even too long ago, one person would be doing both of our jobs, you know, when games were low enough fidelity that you could actually do that. And even within the extended work week of a normal game developer, actually create a game, one person deciding how the level looks and what happens there. But since that's split out between two people, but those two halves of the experience still impact each other so much, there's a lot of collaboration of, you know, I'm like, this needs to happen in this room, and how are we going to, you know, get the proportions right and get the layout right and get the lighting and everything else about what the space is going to be to make the gameplay complement the space and the space complement the gameplay and back and forth.
We're collaborating from start to finish, and so the aesthetics and the gameplay are sort of, you know, on equal footing and balanced early on.
Ideally.
Many game companies today structure their teams such that the designers and artists work separately. In this structure, a level designer would map out the rooms of a level with gray boxes and then hand that shell to an artist who would decorate the space. The level would then be passed between the two, but they do not work side by side, as Steve and Alex, and all of the 2K Marin level teams, do today. However, it might not be obvious to an outside observer why a level team is so much different than two separate artists, so I asked for more details about how their process actually works, and why 2K Marin decided to use this structure rather than the more traditional tried-and-true way.
I think, for example, if, take a hospital, for example, you know, if you're designing a hospital level, and you know, potentially you'll get a really sort of gameplay maze that happens to have hospital beds and wallpaper and versus we try to think of it more as like a functional space and like kind of design around like what would architecturally make sense and you know, at the same time obviously trying to have good game mechanics and such, but I think we're really thinking about you know, the architectural space early on.
Yeah, I imagine that the artist's life is a lot harder in the situation where they just get a bunch of boxes that a game designer made and then have to try and make it look good, you know, because game designers, depending on who the individual is, may or may not have a great deal of, you know, experience or emphasis on the architecture of the place and more thinking, okay, the room should be about this big. Okay, that's fine. I'll spawn some guys in it. I think that we're going to hope, I mean, the intent is to have a much more architecturally cohesive space all throughout the project,
right.
With our process, as opposed to here's some boxes and then the artist is like, I can't make this work, and you have to do revision and there's complications later on, etc.
I mean, I think it's really important that we make it feel like a really functional place, like, you know, people actually live in this place, and it served a, you know, before it was blown up and became a, you know, dystopia, it sort of, you know, had a purpose, and, you know, it served, you know, served a, you know, as a business or as a, you know, workspace or whatever, and it feels like you're sort of entering into you know, place where people have lived and existed.
Just like my conversation with Jordan and Hoagie a few weeks ago, Alex and Steve again hit on one of the major building blocks of BioShock, the realistic nature of Rapture. One of the most praised aspects of BioShock was how alive the city was, and that the spaces not only felt real, but that they had a history, that they had existed before the present state that you, the gamer, saw while playing through the levels.
The nice thing about Rapture is that it is underwater at the bottom of the sea. Everything had, you know, had to be man-made to be fairly compact and probably laid out in a you know, relatively arbitrary way, you know, like, okay, there's small buildings connected by tunnels and everything, so there's still a lot of play for a designer to say, well, Rapture has its own sense of organization, you know, so we aren't as, beholden to the normal rules of, like, a surface city or a building that you might be in right now or whatever, because Rapture works a little bit differently, but, yeah, we still want to make it feel like the citizens of Rapture actually lived in this place, even if it's a little bit weirder than you're probably used to.
I still didn't quite understand exactly how Alex and Steve interacted from day to day and what their workflow actually looked like, so I asked them to dig a bit deeper and tell me more about their process. As I said before, the duo are in charge of BioShock 2's fourth level, and as I didn't want to spoil any part of the game for our listeners, I asked them to talk about a hypothetical level instead of what they were actually building.
It's the circus level. Spliced clowns. Have you ever seen a spliced clown? It's weird. Get ready for it.
Okay.
Steve and Alex's hypothetical level is derived from some old BioShock 2 plot rumors that flooded the internet just before the game was featured in Game Informer magazine. While I appreciate their sense of humor, don't get your hopes up. They're talking only in hypotheticals, and their level does not, in fact, feature any spliced clowns or anything else that they talk about. We were here to talk about level design, and not spoil an actual level. But even in doing this, I saw how close Steve and Alex really were to one another, and what a good and natural team they made.
The nice thing is that we have art design collaboration from square one. So, you know, everything starts on paper, and we essentially, a team like us gets a concept and some high-level goals and themes, like, from the creative director, lead level designer, saying, here is generally what the place is and the kind of experience broadly that we want the player to have in kind of the arc of the whole game. Now you guys come up with what's kind of objectives that might translate into specifically, and draw up a bunch of paper layouts of the place, of what are some major locations, how are they going to be situated in relation to one another, what would the flow through the space be. And art and design are working hand in hand on that from the concept phase. And, you know, then that stuff goes through a review. What do the leads think of it? How could we make it better? Or is this, that not going to work conceptually? And then it starts to go into 3D in the editor, and we start prototyping the gameplay and everything.
Yeah, I mean, early on, we sort of figure out, okay, what are these locations? What are sort of major spots? Is this a circus tent or a robot factory or whatever? And
right.
and then on my side, I like to sort of figure out kind of what are the, like, postcard shots, like, what, you know, what would be really cool to see down here? Do we want to have a wrecked Ferris wheel, or we want to have a you know, 80-foot robot that's, you know, out of control or whatever. Yeah. It's a crash through the floor or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, sort of dramatic cinematic sort of framed moments, and then we sort of figure out how to integrate that into the level. And of course, the whole time we're talking about what would happen there, sort of the you know, gameplay beats are.
Yeah, Alex does a lot of really cool kind of perspective concept art when at that phase, you know, where it's sort of like, okay, if we came up with this location and it's whatever the circus master's private lounge, I'll do a painting of that and get an idea of what's the tone and some inspiration for what the final 3D assets you might end up building to populate it might be and all that kind of stuff.
And a lot of times it's either you know, design has a really cool mechanic they want to get across, and then we have to sort of visually solve that, or maybe design will riff off something that art comes up with, like, oh, here's this whatever, you know, this cool thing and it looks really cool, and how can we base some gameplay around that?
Yeah, having more heads on the problem of the level, if you want to look at it as we're kind of solving all the problems that come up, is really useful. It is way better than just having one person kind of staring it down and deciding, okay, this is what we're going to do, and then handing it off. You know, the more people that can be throwing ideas at any point in the process, the better I think it's going to come out, because you play off of each other's brainstorming all throughout.
And then occasionally we'll be like, you know, in the middle of production, and you'll be like, hey, why don't we do this? And like you'll have a new sort of fresh idea or experiment. We'll just throw stuff in there and just see what sticks, and it either sucks or it's really cool or whatever. And you know, it was sort of
works good enough.
So where were they now in the design process, and what had they been up to all this time designing Secret Level 4?
It started out as a fairly large space that had a bunch of different individual kind of like you said, wings to it.
Early on, we extracted sort of a whole wing from our level. Actually, that got rolled off into a whole another level.
Then also, that means we're gonna have to fill in that missing space in our level with something that fits the theme and the objectives and all that kind of stuff.
But it is very iterative too. I mean, we've done quite a bit of, you know, experimenting and you know, trying things.
Experimenting and the iterative nature of the level teams seemed the core of this design philosophy. I wanted to know more about that. How did two people with such distinct tasks work together to convey the overall theme of a level and help progress the game's story?
I think sometimes the problem was we had too many ideas and we were trying to shoehorn like 50 themes like into a single level, and you have to sort of pick like here are the two or three sort of ideas that we want to get across. You know, there's some you know, primary theme stuff, and there's some secondary areas, and in that was a case where we had to sort of we had too much going on, and it was more like time to prune down a little bit,
which is nice, because then it ended up, you know, some of those ideas got to live in their own separate space and become developed further, as opposed to just being a little isolated thing that's kind of crammed into where they first were. So
I think that becomes a problem if you start every 15 feet you start having some sort of new aesthetic or new theme you're trying to, you know, the player has to digest. It can be you know, pretty overwhelming.
I think that was something that I mean, evidence of doing it the right way was definitely clear in the first game, just in that, you know, in the medical pavilion, there was a dentist office, and there were competing dentist office, and there was a funeral parlor, and sort of all of these minor things, but it was held together by this entire space is going to be made up of offices where doctors or, you know, sort of health care people did business, or Fort Frolic was a mall, and there was this kind of shop and that kind of gambling parlor and this kind of, you know, nightclub there, but it was all held together by a single aesthetic, which there were only minor variations on in any given space. And so, yeah, having that kind of cohesion to the identity of the level is really important, and something that you can definitely start off with a gigantic sort of cornucopia of ideas that you kind of have to cut the ones or scale back the ones that don't hang together with everything else.
And aesthetically, you're sort of, when you take a level, you're sort of creating a set of textures and meshes that sort of are, you know, for general use in that level, and then you're creating sort of subcategories of, like, yeah, the dentist set and the funeral parlor set and sort of sub theming, but trying to keep sort of a cohesive visual style to the level, so it doesn't sort of jump all over the place.
I don't want to make it sound like everything was roses and puppy dogs for Alex and Steve. I asked them, point blank, if they'd ever butted heads over anything in their design process, and asked them to tell me more about the gruesome details.
Well, it was early on we had a knife fight, just because, like I said, I wanted the circus level. Unfortunately, that was not going to be feasible, and Alex knew it, but we got it out of our system, and now we work together.
Yeah, solve it with fist fights in the parking lot.
Yeah, so we're over that and working together beautifully.
All joking aside, they did tell me how they avoided clashes. And actually, it seemed that this kind of design team structure was a perfect way to avoid many designer versus artist disagreements. Harkening back to something Steve had touched on earlier, if a designer and artist worked on a level separately, there would be obvious disconnects between how the level had to be structurally developed, such that it didn't impede the gameplay, and how the level should be structured so it was visually pleasing and immersive. When work is siloed, conversations on how to meet both those demands didn't happen naturally, as they do in 2K Marin. In fact, those discussions include more people than just Steve and Alex, because a game has so many different elements that go far beyond just structure and visual art.
Well, it's really interesting. Our process is we have various layers, like the different sort of people working on a level. There'll be a design layer and an art layer and a visual effects layer and a sound layer. And they all we integrate those every usually about once a week.
Yeah.
And so occasionally we'll throw in something an experiment or something like that, and it'll kind of the Monday morning surprise or sort of, what the heck is that thing?
Yeah.
So but usually we negotiate and kind of come to some sort of a, and usually they're pretty good ideas.
I think any of the any kind of friction that arises is usually early on, you know, where it's like somebody comes into a meeting or whatever and has an idea that the other person isn't aware of yet, and it's like, we should do this, and the immediate response can be like, well, wait, we can't do that because it won't mesh with this, that, or the other thing. And then from that point, I think from both sides of the equation, you know, the one party might start to warm up to the idea, and the other party might realize that some of the idea isn't going to work, so they scale it back, and it's a compromise, but I don't think there's been any, like, serious conflict, you know.
And honestly, I've learned to have a lot of trust in Steve. Like, I think he makes pretty good calls on this stuff. So I so far he hasn't blown it yet. So
we'll see.
Yeah. So I've learned to kind of just let him roll with stuff, and usually it works out pretty well.
They'd used another term that intrigued me: layers. What did it mean to have multiple layers of design, and how did they get that to flow together?
On the process side, Our tools are much more, we've from our awesome engineering team, we've gotten more tools to have multiple people working on the level simultaneously in their own layers, as you might call them. Some editors actually have literal, like, layering function that you load up multiple layers into one map and it makes the map. We basically just have identical copies of the map that everybody has, you know, the sound guy and the, environment art and design and visual effects like fire and smoke and all that kind of stuff. Each of us have our own copy of the map that we make our changes to. And then we have tools to take those changes and integrate them into the master map, which is basically just bringing everybody's stuff together into one place about once a week, syncing everything up. And then that's where we all start off from again, you know, for the rest of that week. So, you know, like, communications-wise, if the sound guys are working on my map, I'll be talking with them and emailing and saying, what about this sequence, what can we do? And they'll get to continue doing the actual implementation work of that while I'm doing my design stuff and Alex is doing his environment art stuff. We're all getting our stuff done. None of us are, like, sort of holding each other up.
Right.
And then, yeah, we kind of squish it all together and it makes one map and we look at how it all fits.
I mean, there are people on the team who are working on multiple maps. Like the visual effects guys, like, you know, working on all the levels and you know, characters and weapons and all that sort of thing. So we sort of like kind of go over and ask him for, hey, can you make this thing and you know, whatever. And then our sound department is you know, giving us attention at certain points.
Yeah.
These guys were not, however, part of the level 4 official team. They had a lot to work on. BioShock 2 is a pretty huge game, after all. And they were spread out over multiple levels, doing many different tasks the game required.
we're the only two guys that are devoted 100% to our map, you know, so we're always going to have our hands in it, and it's our job to monitor the other work that's going on from other members of the team at any given time.
And then we'll have a meeting once a week where we sort of do a review with the leads on the team.
Yeah.
And at any point our map is available for people to download and play on and sometimes we'll actually have, you know, play time where, you know, the whole team will play and test things out. Or you guys do design sort of design team play sessions.
Yeah. So there's an ongoing process of review both with the leads, which is like a structured thing, and then with peer review from other level designers or artists that are on our same level, just looking at our stuff and giving feedback. So a level is always going to be better, I guess, kind of like I mentioned earlier, the more people you can have looking at it, and on a designer's side at least, that translates to the more people on the team we can have playing it, because as soon as somebody plays it and sends me notes, they're going to play the game differently than I would and see things that I'm used to seeing and have kind of tuned out or whatever, and it's just going to make it a better experience.
One of the problems I found is that I've played the level 6,000 times, you know, and so I can close my eyes and basically finish the level, and so I'll miss, you know, things like, you know, can you see that door from this position, or, you know, what's sort of the visual path through the level, and I have it memorized, so it's really helpful to get, you know, fresh eyes on the thing and get some feedback.
It's the little things that sometimes take a game from being good to great or great to outstanding. The original BioShock had tons of polish and was rich with those little moments that, again, made the city feel alive and real.
I was going to say, another thing that we're working on or we'll be working on is the sort of called the mise-en-scène pass, where we, you know, our level's playable and sort of all the spaces are where they're supposed to be and the themes of those areas, but then we go through and sort of we'll do a pass of like creating little vignettes and sort of story moments in a particular room, or I mean that's, I think that's kind of a hallmark of BioShock, is that you sort of run through there and there's a, you know, a body crumpled in the corner, and there's a burning cigarette and a note and a, you know, and a smashed whiskey bottle, and you have to create these kind of moments of suspense and intrigue.
Yeah, that's a big part of it on the level side, and then the kind of analog to that on the design side is just trying to put in interesting little scripted things or interactive elements in places that the player just might look and be surprised, you know? So sort of, all right, I know the broad stuff. You go here and complete an objective. You go here and there's a big fight. And we've got all that locked down. But, you know, what if I'm in this one room and I glance out this window? Wouldn't it be cool if, you know, the big sister ran by it at that moment? Or, you know, any of that little kind of stuff. If I was going up these stairs and a guy came around the corner and kicked a box down it at me, you know, just the stuff that players are going to be, they're going to be memorable to players, even though they're just the little things that you might catch out of the corner of your eye. That all goes in the polish phase.
And on the art side, I'm just a fanatic about, you know, you want the shadow to be projected across the floor the right way and up the wall and those sort of really, you know, dramatic kind of aesthetic moments. So you're constantly just cruising around and around your level, trying to find like sort of frame things and make sure you've got the right, you know, what happens when you double back and come back from the other direction? Does that look, you know, look okay and look interesting?
Yeah, looking for opportunities for cool moments. Mm-hmm.
I felt like I had gotten a pretty good look into 2K Marin's process, so I released the level team from my sound booth and watched them disappear back into their studio. They had several months of polish left in them, but I didn't want to be the one keeping them for 1 minute longer than necessary. That minute could be used for extra polish, after all. After they were gone, I was left to reflect on everything they had said, and it was quite a lot. While 2K Marin is not the only studio working this way, their process is still pretty innovative, and it not only enriches the levels of BioShock 2, but brings the studio, from small level teams to all those working on the various levels, much closer together, like a finely tuned machine, churning away, breathing new life into Rapture. And while Level 4 may not have any spliced clowns, it has Steve and Alex at the helm, and as they have complete faith in each other, they left me with complete faith in them. I'm Elizabeth Toby, Community Manager at 2K. See you next time for the third episode of the BioShock 2 Podcasts.